Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is a monumental thing here for me. You're my first guest I've ever had on my show. So
that's such an honor.
I know it is, isn't it? I've been testing some conferencing equipment for so long, but I just downloaded this free one and I guess I can give it a shot here and try it and see how it comes out. And so, you know, I've never had guests on my show. I've never just, you know, because I don't get many listeners anyway. I just do it as a hobby. But
No, I've listened before. It's good.
Good. I'm glad. I'm glad you like it. Welcome in to my show, folks. For the very few to listen, I got my first guest. It's Coach Grubbs. Mr. Jeremy Grubbs, he's at I Am Coach Grubbs on Twitter, and he's a basketball veteran. As I can tell, he's very well connected in the whole, you know, grand scheme of basketball. It looks like you know, it seems like you know people, and you know, you have plenty of connections. I guess.
Yeah, I'm in my 13th year coaching basketball. I was a manager for Jamie at Pitt, and. You know, he's helped me out with a couple jobs along the way, D2 job, a high school head job, and I've been in the prep circuit this is my seventh year on the prep circuit. So I was in Huntington prep for 3 years and then moved up to Pittsburgh, back to Pittsburgh, and was First Love Christian. This is my fourth year with them.
That's awesome. I didn't realize you were a manager for Jamie. I actually met Jamie Dixon one time, and it was at an airport, actually. It was at Pittsburgh Air National. And I was picking up a friend. He was there with a recruit, I think Dwight Miller. Uh-huh. And I think he had Kevin Jones from West Virginia, who committed to West Virginia. I guess he had him there, and I think he had Dwight Miller there. And gotcha. I think Kevin went to West Virginia for Huggins. And you know, Dwight Miller, I think, was from Houston, actually. And
right,
I think
right.
He landed
Dwight. I don't remember what happened to him after he came here, though.
No, what's hilarious is on the Panther Lair board, people thought he was going to be a future NBA player because, you know, that's
right.
You know, because, you know, every time a player goes, you know, every time Greentree would come up, that Greentree league, you know, every yep. player was a lottery pick or, you know, I mean, people thought JJ Moore was going to be a one and done.
Yeah. I mean, that league really made it look like a lot of pickup heroes look like studs, you know?
Yeah.
I remember the game, Keith Benjamin had like 60-some points the one game, and, you know, I don't remember how many times he even got the double digits during his Pitt career.
No, he never saw significant playing time up until probably his senior year, and I think Jamie had no choice but to play him at that point.
Right.
Fortunately, it worked out for him. I mean, he had some decent games here and there, but I think his issue was always his defense, I think, was his problem.
Yeah, and he was such a tweener as far as, like, his size. You know, he's only about 6'2", so, you know, he was athletic, but it was just, you know, he really couldn't play the one, and they had Ron and LeVan, so he was kind of stuck in a difficult position.
Oh, yeah, I mean, because by that time there were so many other players. You know, I mean, at least Terrell Biggs. I mean, eventually he developed into something towards his career. He was, you know, a very serviceable player.
Yeah. By the way, I still think if Mike Cook doesn't tear his ACL, then that team wins the national championship that year.
Yeah, that was. Yeah, that really.
That team was so complete. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, that was. I remember that game as well. He and it was weird too, because I mean, like, I was watching the West Virginia Duke game where Deshaun Butler, you know, got kneed, and I was like, for some reason, every time guys, teams play Duke, it seems like players mysteriously get their knees or ankles blown out for some reason.
Right. Yeah. Right.
It's, I guess that's their style of play.
That was also the game of the famous Levant step back against Duke in the Garden. So
yeah,
it was like a, you know, a bittersweet night for everyone who's in that locker room.
Yeah, I'm sure. I because they got to a decent start even without Cook. And well, no, I think they also lost Levant for part of that year too. Or he got hurt.
Yeah,
for a little bit, I remember.
Yeah. So that was my senior year, and Cook tore his ACL that game. Next game, we go to Dayton. We get smacked, and Levant lands on some chick's cheerleader's ankle or something, and he's out for Dayton, you know, a couple weeks. I think it was actually a blessing in disguise for the Big East tournament run because they were able to play Keith more. They were able to play Ron more to one. It kind of gave him some different looks and different, some different options as far as going down the stretch.
Oh, it did. I mean, I remember they just went on a big, I mean, they, in the middle of the year, they had like a little, I don't know if it was fatigue or what, but then they just caught their second win towards the end of the, you know, there was that Syracuse game where they came back and they just had a whole bunch of momentum going that tournament, and they just, they tore apart, you know, Georgetown, that, you know, the championship game. They lost to Michigan State. I mean, they had to play Drew Neitzel and Tom Izzo in the NCAA tournament. Is always going to be a pain to play against.
No doubt.
But it set the tone for the next year, and unfortunately, Scotty Rowland just made the shot. You know, it's
Scotty freaking Reynolds.
Going back to why I met Jamie, he talked me. He actually talked to me. He took down my information, and he actually he supposedly left me tickets at the will call for I think it was for a game against IUP, and turns out he never left them. He never put them in. So and of course the people looked at me like I was crazy that he left them for me, and I was like, oh shit, and I was like, you know what, it doesn't matter. He took down my name and number. The fact that he actually talked to me and asked me if I wanted tickets to the game, and he did feel really good about the season, about Lanny Dwight Miller and all that. I mean, because there was always talk about Jamie and his personality, that he was dry or he was, you know, he just, you know, but, you know, when I talked to him, I thought he was, you know, I was like, shoot, he's probably one of the nicest guys you would, you know, to talk to. I mean, so,
yeah, I think he's like he's the kind of guy who, like, you know, once you get him going, like he's got a great personality, he's funny, you know, and he really like enjoys talking to people. But like then there's other times, like, you know, if he doesn't know you, like, now this is a time obviously he didn't really know you, but like, you know, if he's like in an awkward situation, I think that's where he kind of got that bad rap. I think he has a great personality. You know, when I still talk to him every once in a while, you know, he always makes me laugh when we're on the phone. So, you know, he says something that's pretty funny, pretty typically, you know, in our conversation. So, and I think, you know, I think he gets a bad rap for that, but, you know, I think he's just a little bit guarded.
Oh, I'm sure. And, you know, obviously today they knocked off Texas in the Big 12 tournament. I mean, they brought him in, I guess. One of the reasons why they brought him in was to get that program up to par with the Texas Techs, the Baylors. And, you know, he had a little bit of rough stretch the last few years, I guess. He lost some players, and I guess this year he landed some really good players in the transfer portal. And
right.
And, I mean, there were some – I mean, he got guys from – one guy was from Texas Tech, one guy was from LSU, and, you know, and – I mean, whatever he did, it pieced together because now he's back in the tournament.
Yeah, he made a really good hire in the offseason. Jamie McNeely, who was with Buzz Williams for a real long time, he's kind of like this guy was with Buzz Williams for 16 years, I think, like dating all the way back to Marquette, and I think he played for him in New Orleans. And he's a really good, really connected in the Canadian basketball circle. So, you know, he's got a lot of juice with all those Canadians, and you know, so it was a really good hire for him to hire him. And I know he brought the Miller kid with him, and you know, and then Mike Miles. I don't know if you've watched him much, but Mike Miles is terrific.
Oh yeah, he's really good. Yeah, he's. I mean, you know, obviously, I mean, you know, Jamie was obviously going to go to. I think if TCU doesn't lower the buyout, he probably went. He probably ended up at UCLA. And I think I was reading it. One of the guys at the Fort Worth, you know, Telegram or where the paper is. I guess they just got a new AD, and he didn't want to let Jamie Dixon. You know, he didn't want to be basically this first year going on a head coach search for basketball. So he had to keep Jamie Dixon because he needed. You know, he basically needed a basketball coach. And you know, I think obviously after this year, I think he's probably gonna. You know, he'll be at TCU for a while. I think for a longer while now. I don't think
he's
gonna
leave.
Yeah,
I think he'll finish his career there at this point, just because you know he's got to be 53 or 54. I can't see him coaching past 65. Like I don't see him being one of these guys like Boeheim or Krzyzewski. So, you know, I think he'll probably end up finishing his career at TCU.
Yeah, and I could see him probably doing. I guess he's done. He's got experience with you know with CBS, and you know when he's not you know. When he was not in the tournament, or when you know he spent time in obviously in the booth, you know, with the other guys, you know, I could probably see him doing something like that. I mean, he's, you know, I think he's got the personality for it.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, he's one of the guys, a few guys who's pretty good on those things. Some of those guys just come off as jackasses.
Oh yeah, oh definitely.
So.
So I'm looking.
What other games have you been watching this week?
I mean, I've been flipping through. I mean, I haven't really gotten too entirely involved in college hoops this year. I think this past Pitt season pretty much drained some of my energy out for college hoops.
I can feel you there.
I mean, plus the ACC wasn't really that exciting of a league this year. But I mean, look. Right. I mean. You know, and obviously, I mean, looking here, it's the usual suspects. I mean, I did love watching UCLA this year and last year when they made the run, you know, to the Final Four, you know, with Johnny Juzanga, I think his name is.
Yeah.
You know, Mick Cronin, you know, gets to a Final Four. I mean, he had some decent Cincinnati teams. They just never, you know, they could just never get past you know the first or second round. But
I love Nick Cronin as a coach. I think he's a really good coach. But like you said, you know, he struggled a little bit getting past a certain point at Cincinnati. But once you get that, you know, that bigger job, the better job, it kind of takes care of itself. You know, obviously
Cause look
he's got some stars out there.
Yeah, because look at Ben Hellen. When he left Pitt, he had, you know, he got to the finals a few times. And he had, like,
right,
Kevin Love,
right.
Russell Westbrook. I mean, he was able to get guys. And I think he lost. I think what hurt him at the end was he lost. I guess I don't know if his recruiting fell off or he lost track of recruiting the right players, and it just it basically fell apart for him.
Right. Yeah. I don't really know what went on there. I just remember
Bill Walton pretty much ripping him every other broadcast. I remember.
Yeah. I mean, how high was Bill Walton when he was doing that, though?
But I see Gonzaga obviously is at the top again, and I mean they went to the finals last year, but I'm not sure if they'll ever win a title. I mean they hit, you know, Mark Few has been doing this for so long, and you know I don't know if he can get the, you know, I don't know if he has the players to, you know, to do it again. I mean sure, a Final Four run, but
I actually think this is like their most complete team that they've had.
Really?
They have, okay. Like this is their best team, and I think they have a shot to win it all. Just I think Chet Holmgren's, you know, either the second or third best player in the country. You know, they got guards like Strother, Bolton. I coached Rozier Bolton at Huntington Prep, actually. He's phenomenal. You know, I think they're pretty complete team. By the way, going back to Johnny Juzang, did you know that his uncle is Michael Cooper?
Really?
From the the voice of the Lakers and played with the Lakers.
Oh man, that Michael Cooper.
And then,
yep.
And then his grandpa or his grandpa-in-law or something like that, he's related somehow to Smokey Robinson as well. Yeah, I don't know the exact logistics of that, but I just know that he's related to both. I know the uncle for sure, but like I don't know how exactly he's related to Smokey Robinson, but I thought that was interesting.
that's crazy. Yeah, I see Arizona obviously is at the top again, and Baylor's Baylor, and I think, you know, Auburn obviously, you got the Bruce Pearl's the coach. Of course, people are gonna pretty much. People can't stand Bruce Pearl for obvious reasons. Basically, we'll have that to deal with again, where people say how much of a crook criminal he is, and Kentucky is obviously Kentucky, you know, because Calipari and Kansas, Duke, Villanova. It's always the same ones, same things. Same usual suspects.
Yeah, it seems like it is like the same like 8 or 9 programs, and then. But I mean, at least like there's not one like last year. It kind of seemed like it was destined to be Gonzaga and Baylor the entire year. At least this year's like kind of like wide open to where it could be any of those teams.
Yeah, you that's know, what it looks I, like. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be an interesting tournament as far as that's concerned. I just I think some of these teams. I don't really think Duke's going to make a long run just because. If there's something about their team that seems off, but yeah. Any of those other teams I could see winning it, and I don't know about Villanova either. I haven't watched them enough to even really comment other than knowing who they have on their team. But it seems like those teams are pretty much the main teams. I can't see anybody else really winning it. You know,
no, it's just I mean the ACC's been down. I guess Carolina had to replace their coach. Now Duke has to replace their coach, and
Yeah, I think that's like the main thing is these guys have gotten old. The best coaches, and then I know Hubie Davis a little bit. He's great dude, but should his first head coaching job be North Carolina? Like, kind of crazy. I think like the SEC is just outmaneuvered the ACC to get the best coaches.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the ACC sat back and just, SEC was known more for football, but then they saw the money aspect in college hoops. And those programs, they just took that football money, and they just went and got the best coaches. I mean, they may have been the slimiest coaches, but they win games. I mean, Tennessee grabbed Rick Barnes from Texas, and Texas was done with him, and they just, he's got Tennessee back up to a respectable level, in terms of college hoops, but I'm not sure if he'll get them over a hump like he did, when Texas, he took them to at least the Final Four, I think. But I think with Durant, I think.
No, actually it was with TJ Ford.
Oh yeah, that's right.
They lost in the first round with Durant. They lost in the first round somehow.
I remember now they beat West Virginia. I remember Kevin Pitsnogel, I guess they lose, and Pitsnogel drained that deep three. He was off balance, and it was tied. It was tied, and I think Texas drove down the court, and I guess, and I think it may have been Ford or somebody. I think it was him. So one of them hit a game-winning three as the buzzer ran out.
And yeah, I don't remember exactly how it went down, but that sounds about right.
And I just remember I went to the West Virginia message boards, and they were all in tears because that whole group of Gansey, Pitsnogel, Hebert, those guys, that whole team was gone. It was over. It was all over.
Yeah, as much as I hate West Virginia, that team – and I couldn't stand Pitsnogel, the rest of that team wasn't really that unlikable.
No, they weren't. It was hard to hate
like
them.
Gansey was like the type of – the type of dude that like, every white guy thinks they are, like, just like solid
exactly.
as hell and makes shots and plays hard. And Beeline's son was kind of annoying, but the rest of those dudes were kind of like, they just seemed like, decent dudes. So and Pitsnogel was obviously a thorn in our side and couldn't stand him, but you had to respect him. That team was like the 2010 team that they had that went to the Final Four. I didn't like any of those dudes.
No,
They were very easily hateable.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah. But yeah, it kind of sucked off the you know, for us, it sucked all those years to get to an Elite Eight, and then West Virginia goes to a Final Four, and then we obviously can't go. And I had Final Four tickets down in Houston when Pitt was a one seed, and then of course the Butler game happened, and I was going regardless because it was there, but I was stuck watching UConn and Butler in the finals, and that was probably one of the most boring games I've ever watched. I mean, it was all defense nobody.
Do you think if Gilbert Brown hits that second free throw that Pitt makes that same run that Butler made?
It's hard to say. Because that team was kind of I don't know what it was with that team that year. They were really talented, but there was games and some instances where they did stuff where you just scratched your head.
Right.
And of course,
then they started a 6'4" power forward. So,
Nazi, and he. Mm-hmm.
He was good, but it always gave you a little bit of a disadvantage to be starting someone that short at the four, you know.
Yeah, I have a hard time believing they would have gotten any further than what they did. I mean their path looked easy that year, but everything looks good on paper, but it's all about matchups. And I mean, if you can expose a 6'4" power forward, you can do it.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and that's what got me was.
Go ahead.
Yeah, that's what got me was they always made some head scratching decisions, and of course that him fouling what's his name, Matt Howard, the flopper. Pretty much, yep. That's pretty much summed up that team for me. I mean, it just, for some reason, I don't know what it is. I'm not sure what it was with Jamie, but it just seemed like when he got the tournament, it just seemed like, I don't know if he was tight or if he, always went wrong.
Yeah. I think it was a combination of that. And then, they never had like the guy that like all these other teams had that it was like, you got to go get a bucket. You got to have a guy in the tournament who you can just say, hey, clear out, go get a bucket. And, as good as Brad Wanamaker was, as good as LaVance was, as good as, some of these guys were, they're not like a Dwayne Wade or, not that Butler team really had that. I mean, Sheldon Mack was good, but, he wasn't that good. But, if you look at like a Kemba or, Shabazz Napier, any of those guys, the guards from Baylor last year, like they were all they're all guys you could just say, hey, like go rock out and go get a bucket.
And exactly.
I don't remember the last time Pitt had somebody like that. It's probably been Von Tego Cummings.
Von Tego, yeah.
And I can't remember any other Pitt guard in my lifetime who could just go get a bucket when they said that, go get a bucket. I mean, unless you count Ricardo Greer as a guard.
Yeah, Ricky. That was that's pretty much that's the last time I can remember that. Yeah, even after Jamie left, it seemed like Pitt had guards, but they had no inside presence. And this year, they had John Hewley, but they didn't have they really didn't have anybody else to help him. I mean, they had some guards, but this team in general, on paper, you can tell this was going to be a bad year for them. And
yeah, it was just difficult to lose that many, key components to the transfer portal. And then, having to replace all those guys and unexpectedly, and not really, thinking you're going to have that many spots for high school kids or anything. And then, you got to fill it with transfers. If that's not something that you're used to, then it's difficult. But that's kind of how every coach is going to have to maneuver at this point. And they didn't do a terrible job of it. Obviously Burton worked out well. Yeah. And Mo Guy obviously was, Guy, however you say his name, he was obviously incredible for Pitt this year. So, you know, they didn't do a terrible job of it. It just, you know, it seemed like the pieces never really gelled. And obviously Horton and Nike's situations didn't help the season go as planned. So, you know, I think there's some things there that you could say, like, you know, if this happened or that happened, like, you know, maybe they go 10-10, 11-9, 12-8, something like that in the league. And
yeah,
we're having a completely different conversation at that point. But, you know, you can only say that for so long before you have to actually do it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Because I look at, because Byrne will be back next year. Healy, you know, is slated to come back, you know, Femi Okudel, Dolly, we'll probably pronounce it. He'll be back. Ethel Horton will be back. And hopefully, you know, Knight comes back, but they're gonna have to you know, they had one recruit that was Judah Mintz that was supposed to come, and he decommitted because I guess he was gonna be the only, you know, player there, I guess. And now they're gonna have to go pretty much in the transfer portal and hope, and just, you know, I guess find the right pieces and hope they can put something together. I mean, that's really all I can do at this point with them.
Yeah. You know what? My team went down and played Oak Hill 2 weeks ago, and I saw Judah Mintz, and he's not, you know, I think he's a good prospect. I don't think he would have helped Pitt that much next year. He's got some talent, but I just think he, you know, he's going to need a year before he's really going to come into his own in college. I think that's kind of like shown in who's offered him since he decommitted from Pitt too. I mean, he's choosing between like DePaul and, you know, maybe NC State. So I think like kind of people have kind of figured out that, you know, that he ain't going to help next year, because all these coaches that I've talked to, they're all just saying transfer portal. You got to get older, So yeah, it's just a real bad time for high school recruiting anyway. But yeah, I don't know how much he would help that team. I think he kind of overlaps a lot of the skill sets on the team right now. I mean, he's not, you know, would you rather have a 19-year-old Judah Mintz or a 24-year-old Nike? Yeah, I'm not even going to try to say his last name. Would you, yeah, you know, I think you're going to go with the 24-year-old, you know?
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see. That's the issue I see, is that all their guards have like overlapping skill sets, you know, like other than Horton, they're all combo guards. Like, you know, they need somebody, I think, who can, And you can find this in the portal, who can just really go out and, you know, run a team, get you in some stuff, you know, take a guy off the dribble and get open shots and all that kind of stuff for other guys. You know, and then I think you move Femi to the three and kind of play him in a hybrid role, and you kind of, you know, you get multiple roles filled with just getting one guy like that, you know. You can get lucky like Wake Forest did with Alondis Williams. Like,
yeah,
you know, who would have thought that that guy coming from, you know, I don't even know where he was from, but he averaged 6 points per game last year, and he ended up being the ACC Player of the Year. Like, you know, you can get real lucky like that. And I think part of that luck was that Steve Forbes is a terrific coach, and, you know, he knows how to build teams like that because he was a JUCO guy for so long. But, you know, I think it's definitely possible.
Yeah, it's just it helps being a JUCO coach, because, you know, when you're a JUCO coach, you got to put the right pieces together, you know, because you're not gonna have those. You're going through lots of players every year, so it's
right,
you know,
right.
So you have that type of mindset, especially in today's the way the transfer portal is. I mean, it's you know, it's pretty big, and I'm just wondering, you know, because I know towards the end of Dixon's tenure at Pitt, I remember he ran into some issues where he lost an entire recruiting class. I mean, he, you know, the Butler team that, you know, Ken Birch leaves after a few games, and I think Malcolm Gilbert, they lost, and they started losing players, and then of course he had to, you know, basically get players to come in, and, you know, some of them were really just players. They were just bodies at that point.
Yeah, I think, you know, most of that goes to, you know, a couple factors. Just like, I think, you know, he made some mistakes in hiring assistant coaches.
Yeah.
And then, like, the whole Ken Burch thing, like, ruined Pitt and Philly, just because they had to take Jaylen Bond out of their class. So, like, Philly was just shut off to Pitt at that point. Not that Jaylen Bond ended up having a great career or anything, but
I remember that because we spent so much time trying to break into Philly for recruiting, and we were starting to get some players, and then when that happened, that was that hurt.
So, you know, those kind of things just really hurt, and then, you know, being forced to take Slice back, not that, you know, Slice was bad, but Slice was back for a year and didn't land anybody because he went to Kentucky. Yep. So just the turnover eventually just ended up catching up to him. Because, like, at the beginning of his tenure, it was like, you know, Joe Lombardi gets a job. Like, you know, Mike Rice comes in for a year, he gets a job. David Cox comes in for a year, he gets a job. Orlando gets a job. Like, it was kind of like a hot place to be. To go, like, be like, oh, you're an assistant for Jamie, you're gonna get a head coaching job.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think like that was kind of the turnover caught up with him as far as like with Pat after Pat Scarry left for Towson, and kind of just ruined him from there.
Yeah, because that's what happened with Pat. I mean, it happened with Pat Narduzzi at Pitt too, because he had a lot of turnover with his assistants as well, and he hasn't had that problem lately. I mean. And now it's, you know, I mean, he had that problem with the offensive coordinator, which is something you don't want to have.
And, right.
And I guess he's found the right pieces together, but he's on the defensive side, he's kept, you know, Brandy Bates, Charlie Partridge. I mean, he's keeping those guys happy. I mean, that's a big thing. And, you know, if you can keep your coaches for a while, you obviously you can develop a good, as I say, culture now is what they say. So. But yeah, I guess Jamie went through a lot of assistance, like you said.
Yeah, I think it's a lot different whenever you only got three of them, than with football where, you know, you can kind of lose one pretty much every year and not really miss a beat, depending on who it is. Obviously, if they lost Partridge, it would be pretty devastating. I think that's really contributed a lot to like the quote unquote demise, you know, the demise into still making the NCAA tournament. But, you know, obviously they fell off a bit, you know, but I think, you know, we'd all kill for those last couple of years at this point.
Now we would.
Yeah. Yeah. What are your thoughts on the Brennan Marion situation?
I guess he won the offensive coordinator job, but if you look at his job history, he seems to change jobs every year. And
I don't begrudge the man, like, because you gotta promote yourself in this business, and then you gotta do what's best for you. But I feel like he definitely. You know, he kind of screwed himself a little bit. You know, he put himself into a corner that I don't think he really wanted to be in. Now, I think he's probably happy with his job and money at Texas, but, you know, I don't see how that guy doesn't want to live in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I mean, he's living in Austin now, and, I mean, it's very crowded there. And I mean, obviously there's no state tax in Texas, but I mean, eventually, if he stays long enough in Texas, there'll be an SEC job. But if the thing about Texas is they're very cutthroat with coaches, and if that receiver group isn't performing, I mean, if he has a down year with receivers, they'll easily get rid of him.
For sure. He only recruited one guy for Pitt, I believe.
Yeah.
The wide receiver from Texas, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
He made some inroads for us, but he's very, like, active on social media. He kind of reminds me of a wide receiver of the NFL. And he's been passive-aggressive on Instagram, you know, a few times, and even on Twitter. But, I mean, if you're an offensive coordinator, you can't really behave like that. You know,
yeah,
I mean, if I see my wide receivers coach doing that, Why would I promote you if you're behaving like that? So if something goes wrong in a game, are you gonna, you know, throw me under the bus? You know, go on your page and start, you know, tweeting quotes and whatever else. And you know, it's just, you know, he may have to, you know, I mean, eventually put that aside if he wants. I mean, I'm sure he'll get promoted somewhere at one point, but you know.
Yeah, I think him, it was probably naive of him to think that Narduzzi would change his entire offense in 1 year to the go-go offense. You know, like he's not gonna change what he's done for 7 years. Is it 7 years he's been a Pitt now? Is this his eighth year coming up?
So I
think that was kind of naive to think that, which I'm sure he probably did think that, like, oh, my offense is better, or you're just gonna change it, like, you know, slow down there, dude.
Yeah, and Narduzzi's more of a defensive guy, so I think for him, he likes a balance. He doesn't want an offense where they're gonna just basically, you know, have two or three minute, you know, scoring drives, and you know, and his defense has to be back on the field. You know, he doesn't want, you know, because a lot of his offenses score a lot of points. He doesn't want to hurt his, you know, he doesn't want to have that, you know, put too much on his defense. But I mean, this year, I mean, they threw the ball a lot this year. I mean, they did run it a bit, but they threw, you know, they were airing that thing out. Like, you know, it was a oh yeah, we're that means we're done in 5 minutes.
No problem. Well, we do need to move on to cigars.
Oh yeah, we do. We got to get into that. I guess we've got 5 minutes left.
That's enough time to talk cigars.
Yeah, let's do that real quick, and then I guess next podcast we definitely got to talk about the Adam Sandler movies. So.
I forgot all about the Adam Sandler. That was a terrible take by you, by the way. That's my boy's not in his top five. Yeah, hold on, go with your top five right now before we start cigars.
You know what? I stopped. I really didn't get too much into his movies towards the end, but one of the first ones I've watched in recent, that was, I guess, you know, last 10 years. I thought it was my first one obviously is going to be Billy Madison. You know, that's my number one. I think number two will probably be Happy. There's been so many other ones. I did like Big Daddy. That wasn't too bad of a film. I guess, and of course, there's Grown Ups.
You're missing my favorite one.
What was the
Wedding Singer?
Oh shoot! You know what? And I just watched that too. That's how bad.
That's
my
favorite Adam Sandler movie. For me, it goes one Wedding Singer, two Big Daddy, three Happy Gilmore, four Billy Madison, five probably Grown Ups.
Yeah, because I think with Big Day, you saw more of a sentimental side of him. With less, you know, it was more goof. It was the goofiness, but him being more, I guess, the sentimental.
Yeah, I mean,
I guess,
he's funny in it, but it's also like a good, like, you know, story and all that kind of stuff. It's just a good movie in my opinion. And same with Wedding Singer. It's just, you know, those are just classic movies.
Yeah, the Wedding Singer definitely, because it was about the 80s and Miami Vice.
All right,
you know,
so on to cigars.
Yep. Well, you know what? I was at a cigar shop the other night, and I guess because I used to order mine online, but like, I went to an actual shop, and I found two Filthy Hooligans from this past year, and
yeah,
there was two left, and I picked those up for St. Paddy's Day.
Oh, they're phenomenal, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, they're made from Alec Bradley, and I think I've been smoking a lot of Alec Bradley's cigars lately. They've got some really good stuff. You know, so.
Yeah, I mean, I need to branch out a little bit because I'm like a slave to the Hooligans. So you're gonna have to throw me some suggestions here in the future, but
I
go
to
this
something.
One. Yeah, I was probably intoxicated when I read it. So I probably don't remember. Mm-hmm. there's a little shop on McKnight Road that you can go in, bring your own beer, and have a cigar, and it's a pretty cool place that me and my friends have kind of gathered to watch March Madness the last couple of years and some big golf tournaments. So that's what I'm planning on doing next week at some point.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, that's a good time, because usually I go on my patio and have a cigar and, you know, just do all that. But, you know, like what I did last year was, since I have a fire stick, I moved my television by my window so I could at least watch the games while I was out in the patio. So I had
nice,
that going for
nice.
Me.
Nice. Do you have any drinks with it, or you just go straight cigar?
Sometimes I go straight cigar. I'll have wine with it, or what's a good pairing? Is it like bourbon? Is it
yeah. All right, we got 1 minute. Yeah, I think bourbon is, but you know, I'm kind of like I'm gonna have a beer to sip, you know, just because my mouth gets so dry smoking the cigar. So that's kind of what I usually go with.
That's a good idea. I'm about to do beer. I like beer because I don't like the, you know, I usually keep water with me, but sometimes funny, like a combination of a good buzz, you know, I gotta have some sort of alcohol.
Yeah. The only problem is if you're sitting for too long, it can be a little challenging to stand up.
Oh yeah, but definitely. But we got 15 seconds here, so I'm gonna end it here, man. It was awesome having you on the
good
show.
Good talking to you.
And we'll definitely do this again.
All right, sounds good.
Thanks, man.
All right, later.